Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Welcome to the Lazy CEO Podcast. I'm Jane Liu. Join my conversations with the entrepreneurs behind the iconic brands we all know and love.
Hey, Potty fam. Welcome to part two of my chat with She's on the Money's Victoria Devine. In case you missed part one, we talked about how you can get on top of your finances and better track your budget. And in this episode, we talk about the different ways you can invest your money, the pros and cons of property investment, tips on how to get yourself out of debt, how to manage lifestyle creep, and much, much more. Get out your pen and paper for this episode and let's get into it.
Let me hack this and ask you, what's the question that you get asked the most when it comes to money?
Where should I be investing? The number one question I get asked is, where should I be investing?
I'm going to give you two scenarios. I'm going to have Caitlin, our 25-year-old assistant, and then we're going to have someone who's a 30-year-old mum,
yeah,
with a double income and a child. Where should Caitlin invest?
It's really hard to answer that because one, I don't know Caitlin's financial situation, but two, I think people always want the golden egg, right? They want me to go, you know what, actually, Jane, if you could just go down the road and pick up a Vanguard ETF, that's what you want. Where in reality, that might not make sense. The first thing I'd start off with is platform. Like, how much money have you got? Like, has Caitlin got $500 or is she just starting with her first $10? Because we'll pick our platform based on that. If you've got your first $500, you've got a few more options, but that doesn't limit you. You might go down the road and be like, I'm going to download the Sharesies app. And I use Sharesies as an example because you can invest with as little as 1 cent on there. Like, there's no barrier to entry from my perspective. So she goes and downloads her Sharesies app. What I would want her to do then is have a think about, like, am I a bit conservative? Am I risky? What kind of person am I? She might Google a risk analysis questionnaire and work out what type of risk she's willing to take on. As you said before, Jane, you think you're really conservative and you should be a bit more like conservative with decisions you make. But I would say that you're a high growth investor, but you want to make sure you're making the right decision. So we work out where we're at, and then she would go and pick an asset. Katie might turn around and say, all right, well, I want to be a direct share investor. I actually want to own them myself. And I go, okay, great. Well, what types of shares? Are we looking at blue chip? Are we going and buying, you know, all of the boring banks? And we might buy some oil and mining. And we might buy some boring stuff and you've got to manage it yourself. Or are you going to go down the road and get an ETF, which is an exchange traded fund? And it is a fund that is essentially a basket of companies that a manager has picked that you buy on the platform. So the way I like to explain the platforms is, like, Jane, let's say your kids need yogurt and you're like, yep, great. The squeezy pouches are definitely not sending me broke. But you go to the supermarket, right? You wouldn't go to the dairy. You wouldn't go right to the dairy and be like, all right, I'm going to purchase yogurt. You go to a supermarket. And then once you're in the supermarket, you're presented with a number of options. The supermarket is your share trading platform. So your share trading platform is the first place that we need to stop on our investing journey. And you might be a Coles girl. You might be a Woolies girl. You might be a little bit bougie and go to Thomas Ducks. I don't know what the comparison is in Sydney, but, like, Thomas Ducks is a really expensive bougie grocer, right? So you could pick any of those. But once you're inside the shop, that's when we make our decision. That's when we buy something or track something that aligns to our values. And Katie might say, all right, well, actually, maybe you're a hippy-dippy vegan who cares so much about the environment. That means that you're wiping off 90% of the share market to begin with because you've told me that you want to invest ethically. So you might go, V, I need an ethical ETF. In which case we will whittle down what we need and use the search terms in our app and find a few options that work for us. And that is how we would pick what we invest in, not what is right. Because then we flip, Jane, you might have thousands of dollars because you own a really big fashion brand. And you might actually go, I don't want to go to the shop and buy it myself. I want to go see a financial advisor and I want them to not only go to the shop, but I want them to zoom out and look at my whole picture. I want them to include things like property. I want them to look at bonds. I want them to look at individual shares. And you know what? I don't want to lift a finger. I want them to do all of that for me. And I just want to get a form and be told, Jane, your investments are doing well. So it really depends on who you are and what you do as to what you invest in. And that's why I can't go, oh, here's the asset, because it has to align to your values. But once you understand them, they're right there.
At which point would anyone just like actually invest in a specific share versus just like the ASX top like 200?
It's the top 200 companies in Australia, right? Like, and if you buy the index, you're buying the average of all of them.
Besides if, say, it's like an ethical reason or whatever, like would anyone really be like, oh, I particularly like this kind of, like,
well, some people do. So some people really want to invest in direct shares because they want the control. Or they think, Jane, they think they're really smart and they're like, I can run my own share portfolio. If we look at the research, no, you can't in comparison to a good ETF manager.
Yes.
But it's all about giving people choice and obviously letting them choose what they want to invest in. For me, it would be about working out, you know, how much control you want. So I am an ex-financial advisor and I've been very open. I can't legally tell people what my ETFs are, but I would say 90% of my share portfolio is split between two ETFs. Like, I am not silly enough to know that managing it myself is a, you know, a great idea. I'm a bit of a set and forget kind of girly. I've chosen an international ETF and an Australian ETF, and I've called it a day in that for now. I do still have a bit of fun. So like, because I was a financial advisor, Jane, I love a share. I love having a, it's not gamble, but it's a little bit of a punt. I love reading through businesses, annual reports and picking up shares if I think that there's a lot of opportunity, because that's what sparks my joy and that's what gets me excited. A lot of people will think I'm insane and that's okay, but I still do a bit of that. But for me, I look at the research and I just go, the money is in time and it's in boring assets and it's in creating wealth over the long term. And I share that because I think that as young women, we just think it automatically has to be harder than it is. And it's not.
Are there other things that you would advise anyone to look into?
So there are four main asset classes here in Australia. There is cash, which I think we all understand. It's in your bank account. You get paid. There's fixed interest. So that's things like term deposits and bonds. And I would want you to understand those because they do make up part of a portfolio or can. A fixed interest asset could be a bond that's issued by the government, or it could be an asset like a high interest savings account that you need to lock your money into for a period of time. They're usually a little bit more conservative because they have lower rates of return. But here in Australia, our bonds are AAA rated, which means we've never not had one returned. So that does make people feel confident. Then there's shares, which we've touched on, and they could be direct shares, they could be ETFs, it could be managed funds. There are heaps of ways to access them. And then there is what I would call the Australian dream, and that is property. So we need to talk about property because it's an option that so many people in 2024 still want to access. Like, they still, you know, have this dream of getting into property, whether it is their first family home or an investment, and we need to understand whether that works for us. Those are the four main regulated asset classes here in Australia. And then we've obviously got additional things like crypto, which I don't love and don't support. So crypto is an asset class that I just don't love.
Why?
Not because people aren't making money in it. It's because it just doesn't have enough financial backing. If a cryptocurrency disappears, there's no big bank that sells their stuff and, you know, refunds some of your money. There's no real substance to it. And it's so risky that it confuses the hell out of me that young women in particular are happy to buy crypto, but they're not happy to buy a really basic index fund following the top 200 companies in Australia. So I go, all right, well, where are your values at? Because you're saying you're scared of investing, but then you're buying crypto. I'm like, we need to reset your education here.
And so with property, like, how do you think, I mean, it's just such a crazy time that we're in, that the multiplier of like how much property prices has increased relative to how much people's incomes have increased.
Yeah. I have a fun stat for that, actually. Late last year, I released my book, Property with She's on the Money. And doing research, I found that in 1975, when our parents were probably looking at property, Jane, the average household income was $65,000. And the average property in Sydney and Melbourne between the two cost about six or eight times the average family income. So you go, all right, no worries. Speed forward to 2022, and the average property costs 22 times our annual salary.
Oof.
And obviously our average income is now not what it used to be. In fact, if property inflation, so you know how property has gone up over the last 40 years, if that inflation had been applied to our incomes, the average income of an Australian family would be $160,000. But it is not. So what has happened is property prices have gone through the roof and our salaries have not kept up. And that's just inflation. That's how it works. But that means that purchasing a property in 2024 is now significantly different than it was when our parents did it. And our parents had the ability to purchase property and, you know, move into it, pay it off before they retired, and that was their family home. We no longer have that opportunity. As young women, if we decide we want to own property, we'll often go, all right, I want to own property, but now I have to compromise basically everything I want about a property because I can't purchase in a city. I can't purchase where I want. I have to purchase regionally and then use it as a stepping stone. Is it a bad idea to buy property now? No, absolutely not. But the purchase and the transaction and what you're going to get is very different to what it used to be. And we just have to set our expectations differently. But there is still a lot of wealth to be created inside that property space.
Property is like the Australian dream, and everyone, I think, overemphasizes, I think, on property as an asset because it's just because it's tangible, it's not actually liquid. And so, you know, that people don't really value the liquidity that might come with the other asset types. Everyone thinks that rent money is dead money, but so is interest.
Like, rent money is not dead money because either way, you're going to have to pay to keep a roof over your head. I think rent money can be dead money if you're spending an abominable amount of money on a house that just makes you look fancy and you don't even like. When I was, you know, at uni, when I had my first jobs, rent money to me wasn't dead money because I was living in an area that gave me the lifestyle I wanted to live. To me, rent money is a lifestyle cost because do you know what I could do? I could go move into a share house with 15 other people and it would be much, much, much cheaper. But that doesn't help me afford the lifestyle that I think I deserve.
What advice do you have for someone to effectively manage and pay off debt?
I think the first thing you need to do is stop being mean to yourself about it. Debt doesn't make you a bad person. Like, having debt doesn't mean that you're silly. It just means that at some point in your life, you spent more than you earned. That
you
is literally
all it means. You just YOLO'd a little bit. You just enjoyed life.
And like, it doesn't make you silly. It doesn't make you dumb. It doesn't make you behind. I think so many times we're embarrassed of this because you're like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like, Jane, I got into all this debt. But in reality, like, it just means you spent more than you earned. You don't even have to tell me what it was. It could have been clothes and shoes. It could have been an education. It could have been medical costs. Like, irrespective of what it is, reflecting on that and being mean to ourselves about it, it doesn't help. What we need to do is create a plan and go, okay, cool, I need this to move forward. To move forward, I need to be paying more than the minimum repayments. What does that look like? And how can I build that into my budget? To me, smashing down debt is an investment in itself because you're proving to yourself you have that behavior. Like you have that ability to cash flow, right? So say you're paying $200 a week off your debt. That feels like trash because you're feeling, oh my gosh, that's so much money every single week that goes from my paycheck into debt. My friend, the second you are out of that debt, that's $200 a week you could save or invest. Like that's $200 a week we could put away for a holiday. That's $200 a week that you could put in towards creating financial freedom in the future. So to me, I think it's about creating a really good mindset shift that, all right, I have a task. I have to get out of debt. Once that task's done, I'm going to thrive. But you're teaching yourself this great amount of discipline along the way because so many people don't create that discipline and then they get out of debt and they're like, oh, well, what do I do now? I'll reallocate those funds. Like you're setting yourself up for success if you create a structure. So the best way to get out of debt is to just put it all on the table and create a little plan. There are two different, I guess, methods that you could use. There's the avalanche method or the snowball method. And the snowball method is kind of like starting with your smallest debts and paying them off as we go, because how exciting is it when you get an email saying, oh, your credit card balance is completely paid off and you can close it? It's like a snowball method is really about, the snowball method is really about taking small steps, but getting gratification earlier on. And then the avalanche method is ordering them by your highest interest rate. So starting at the highest interest rate, the one that's screwing you over the most, and we're going to start there and smash that debt out and then move on. So I think we need to break it up, but also look at it collectively. So like, let's write it down. How much debt are you in? You'd be silly if you didn't try and negotiate it. Call the bank, be like, hey, I'm in heaps of debt and I've decided to get out of it. Can we lower it? Can we freeze the interest rate for a little while? What can you do for me to help me pay you back? And most of the time they'll be like, oh, okay, well, Jane, that's really good. We still want our money. But like, what if we just froze the interest rate for a couple of months while you paid that off? So I think that there's a lot you can do to be empowered. And if you're in a circumstance where it's all consuming and overwhelming and you just can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, the National Debt Helpline is my favorite resource to call. And I feel like a lot of people shy away from calling a resource like that because you're like, I don't really need it. But these girls, they are wizards and they do the best thing ever, but they are just like you and me. Like if you work for the National Debt Helpline, it's because you actually want to get people out of debt. You're not calling the CEO of the company going, hey, so I've messed up. You're calling someone like you and I who's passionate about getting you out. And I can almost guarantee they have seen way worse situations than yours and they have all the tools and resources.
What are some of the other like pitfalls that you find in common when it comes to like managing their money?
Lifestyle creep. Lifestyle creep is massive. So it's where your expenses increase over time and it's not noticeable. So my favorite example of lifestyle creep for me personally is when I was at school, I used to buy all of my makeup at the supermarket. My mom would let me buy it if it was on sale. And then I went to university. And so I upgraded, Jane, and I started buying makeup from Priceline. And I wouldn't just get it on sale. I would always go to Priceline and try it. Mm-hmm. And then I went down the slippery slope of going into a Mecca store. And so like at all of these places, yeah, I'm buying a foundation, but my foundation has gone from like $9 to now $95, Jane. And so it's a slippery slope of like, do I actually need the Mecca foundation? I love it. It's in line with my values, but like over time, your expenses increase, but you're not actually getting a lot more for it. So we need to be aware of these expenses and how we justify them. And I mean, I'm the worst example of that because I'm a level 4 at Mecca. Like I regret nothing. Like I have no regrets at all. It's in line with my values. But I am aware that that's a part of my lifestyle creep where my stuff's just more expensive to purchase now because I've set a higher standard. So I think if you're trying to save or trying to be better at money, having a look and going, all right, well, what did I used to do before I could afford this? And I don't know about you, Jane, but when I was at
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like $50 for a whole weekend was more than enough. Like,
oh, yes.
I could go get some cheap bottles of wine. We'd go out for dumplings with my friends. I don't even know how I'd come home with change.
I used to smuggle bottles of wine into clubs and then take it out. Or like Smirnoff Double Blacks, take it in there and then start drinking it. And just like, and I used to save so much money.
You and me, I feel like younger you and I would have gone off together. We were like hiding flasks in our handbags. We were doing shots as we went outside. Like I don't regret any of it, but I remember having a beautiful lifestyle. I had so much fun. I mean, I probably could have drunk way less, but I was having so much fun. And I go, how did I do that? And now I feel like I can't even leave the house without accidentally spending $50.
I can't believe how expensive things are. Any advice on living through this cost of living crisis?
Look, I think it's going to get worse until the end of the year. Like if we look at what economists are predicting, we know that the interest rates and the cost of living crisis is potentially going to get worse before it gets better. But I think it's about all the little things, like small things add up. It's the morning coffees. It is, you know, not remembering to take lunch to work, all of those things that, don't get me wrong, I adore my coffee, but is there a way that maybe I don't need two a day? Maybe I go and buy, you know, the Jarra pre-made ones that I can have at my desk and I might take a step outside while I drink it so that I feel like I'm still getting, you know, that break at work. Maybe you think of a few things that you could have in your desk to have at work, because I'm not the type of girl who's going to meal prep. Like, let's be brutally honest, it's not going to happen. But you know what I could do? Get some of those SpaghettiOs and a loaf of bread to keep in the work freezer, and I can make toasties at work, and that becomes far more economical. I don't know about you, but I don't care if I eat the same thing for lunch every day. I just don't care. Let's go back to basics. We don't need smashed avocado during the work week. I think it's all about priorities, right? Like some people are really happy to sacrifice things for the bigger picture and others aren't. And I think that that's okay, but that's where we need to kind of like put some blinkers on and stay in our own lane. You're asking, what can we do as a team? It's like, stop comparing yourselves to one another. Like stop comparing, you know, the fact that Jane has her nails and I want my nails. Like start thinking, is that something that I actually want? Or do I want it because it's pretty? For me, it's about just, keeping those blinkers on and making sure that we're not comparing ourselves when we don't know the whole situation about somebody.
Hey, PolyFam, I've got something special for you. For a limited time only, I have a discount code for my business course. In case you didn't know, the course is a blueprint for starting an online business and growing it to 7 or 8 figures. It's 10 modules of videos that you can watch at your own pace, covering everything from sourcing product, growing and developing your product range, operations, and marketing and scaling your business. Just use the code PODCAST at checkout at thelazyceo.com. What's your personal risk profile? Like, what would you say you are?
I'm a high growth investor. I don't think that that's going to surprise anybody, but I always say like I'm a conservative high growth investor, which is obviously conflicting, but it's because I want access to high growth assets, but I don't want to take on an asset that carries a lot of risk. So I'm willing to have a lot of my money exposed to the share market, but it has to be tried and true and tested. And I do want the boring asset classes like the big banks. I'm happy to have those. And you know what? I'll put heaps of money into those, but I'm not that happy to, like, you know, do day trading or flip stocks. So I think that that's where I draw my line and I go, well, that's not going to work for me.
You're starting a family. Does that change your views and plans around money?
Not necessarily. So I think I've always been lucky in that in the last 5-6 years, I've solidified what I want my financial future to look like, and I've been working towards it. I think, to be honest, when it comes to kids and money, I think this the thing that worries me the most is that because I am personally financially secure, I don't want my kids to be entitled. Like, I don't want my kids to assume that because mum and dad are financially secure and yes, they don't miss out on anything, that becomes an expectation and they lose that level of gratitude. I feel like because I grew up in a family where, you know, money was fine, like there wasn't a problem, but it wasn't in abundance. I think that once I'm now there and I'm looking at money and I'm, you know, very grateful, but I've worked really hard to get here, I just don't want kids or my kids to not learn about money. So it's like trying to find this balance of, you know, I don't even have this baby here yet. And I'm already thinking, like, will they get pocket money? If so, where, like, how will I manage that? And if they,
how do you say no? You know, where do you draw the line?
How do you say no when all I'm probably going to want to do is give them the world?
And if
right?
they want a toy, like, what if it's like, you know, not educational, but like, yes, it kind of, having new toys,
it sparks joy for them. I want them to be happy all the time.
And it's like, I think this is probably going to be like my biggest like thing. I would have such a different childhood to what my kids have and how I can like just keep, I don't, number one, I don't want them to be jerks. And number two, I don't want them to be entitled. That's like my two biggest things. Cause no doubt they're going to be brilliant.
Obviously.
Yeah. But yeah, don't want them to be jerks or entitled.
That's something that's going to look different for everybody, right? So when it comes to investing for my kids, yes, I'm investing for their futures, but I think alongside that, I'm investing for me. And so like, I think that by me focusing on creating financial stability, you know, for my husband and I, that's ultimately going to impact my kids. I don't know how I feel about this idea of investing for them. So I am, but I don't know what it'll look like once they do turn 18 or 21, because I hate the idea of what would have happened if you'd given 21-year-old me a lump sum of cash. I would have blown it. So like, I think I look at it and I go, I'd like to have it in case they, you know, want help buying a house or they want help, you know, furthering their education or, you know, going on a really big world trip. But I don't know if I trust.
Also, like in 20 years time, how can they afford houses?
It'll probably like be worth $4.
Yeah.
But yeah, you look at it and you go, yeah, I think the thing that I want to teach my kids about money is just open, honest conversation and them understanding that they are privileged, but also what it looks like to give back. I know that a lot of like what I'll focus on is making sure that they understand that the world is a better place when you give more. So I think, yeah, that'll be the hardest thing, because how do you teach that to a toddler who doesn't care?
We'll do a follow-up in a few years and you can tell me what you've kind of pondered on and figured out, and we can just join our notes on this, because that's definitely such a hot topic for me. How should entrepreneurs in early stage businesses approach financial planning differently? Is there any particular advice you can give them?
I think you can do so much for free. Like in business, you can do so much without spending a cent, and you absolutely should do as much of that as possible before launching. So you can do research, you can contact suppliers, you can ask them questions about, you know, what are your minimum order quantities? What would shipping cost? What would this look like? What are the time frames? You can do research on how to build a website. Like these days, it's so accessible. I did my own Squarespace websites. It's wild. There's so much information. Like we live in 2024. You can YouTube basically anything. Like, and I think that every single founder, every single business owner I know, you know, if I don't get it and I went to you and I said, hey, Jane, what do you reckon? What do I do? You'd be like, oh, I saw this YouTube video. Like we all do it. We just like look up how to fix it. Like Google is a founder's best friend, right? Like we're not born knowing how to do this, but what we are born with is an inherent curiosity to always find the answer ourselves. Like, you would be tenacious in comparison to so many other people because you're willing to not ask. You go, no, I'll find the answer out myself. I'll work it out. Like, it'll be great. So I think doing everything that you can do to set yourself up for success, even if it means you're like, I'm not going to take that bite. Like, you know, you might be launching a business with one product at the start. Well, why not do a bit of research on where growth would be? Like, if you're picking a supplier, are you just picking a supplier for one product? Or should we be thinking into the future and finding one that might be able to help you with a few so that you don't have to move later? Because that's a nightmare. So I think it's about forward thinking, and all of that can be free.
And ChatGPT these days, if you get
so helpful.
The upgrade to GPT-4, it's so good. It just gives you all the steps. And then you don't have to watch YouTube on like 1.5 playback because they're deliberately drawing it out.
See, you're me. Anytime I say, oh, Jane, I've read this business book, like, that's a lie. I would have bought the book because I want to touch it and I want it in my office, but I'm listening to the audiobook version on either 1.5 or 2 in the car. Like, I am always listening to something. Like, I can't be left alone with my own thoughts. I either have to have a podcast or I have to have a book. I feel like I have to be like using that time effectively.
Yeah.
If I'm not doing either of those two things, I'm talking to someone on the phone.
How can improving financial literacy empower women? And then what resources do you recommend?
When women have money, women have choice. And when women have choice, the world is a better place. Like, at the end of the day, financially empowering women makes the entire world better. Like, women are the decision makers behind the scenes in every other aspect. And we have not for a very long time been given the grace of being able to make those decisions for ourselves without, you know, a second person trying to control them. But I think a rising tide lifts all ships. And even when one woman gets more financially empowered, another sees them and then goes, maybe I could do that too. And so I think I'm so empowered by it, but also just passionate about it because I know that that's what my community is doing. And now you're going to have to remind me what the second question was.
And what resources do you recommend? Do you know any good resources?
Oh, I've heard of a few. I'm actually going to start with a really boring resource. It is moneysmart.gov.au. And I always recommend them because I would love if you joined my community. Everybody is welcome. But I also just care more that you're getting financial literacy, that you're taking the right steps. And the Money Smart website is free. It is non-judgmental. It's not run by a company. It's run for free by our government. So, like, if you want a budget or you want to learn about compound interest or you want information, that is such a good place to go. If you want to hang out with me, I am obsessed with finance. I love breaking it down in a way that people just get it and don't feel like idiots. Like, I know you because I am you. And that's where I'd recommend my own podcast, Jane. Like, She's on the Money. We do 3 episodes a week and all of them are really easy to digest podcasts that are about finance, but we're still women. We're still talking about coffee. We're still talking about our nails, still talking about, you know, gossip that goes on in our friendship groups. Like, who should pay for that hen's party? So I think it's really fun to be part of a community that's trying to put you first.
Back to you. What is your 2024 goal? And what is yourself?
I wish I could say that I'm really smart and I, you know, am really good at forward planning. We did a team session recently where I took them all away for the week and we stayed in this beautiful house and did vision boards. And if I'm being honest, this year I really want to prioritize having a baby, having time to actually enjoy that. I don't want to regret, you know, going straight back to work and, you know, missing out on that special bubble of time. But I do also want to take over the world. So I'm releasing 2 books this year. So I am hoping that I meet my, my deadlines for those. I've got one coming out in May and one coming out in October. Also, I'm releasing 2 online courses. So those have been in the works for a couple of years, but that'll take a lot of time. But yeah, for me, I think it's about just really building out She's on the Money into having more comprehensive, more absorbable resources. Because at the moment, we have a few, but I just want more. I want it to be really gritty and the one-stop shop that everybody needs when it comes to financial literacy. So I'm kind of doing what I said I was going to do all along.
Love that. Do you have your 2 truth and 1 lie?
Of course I do. I'm ready.
Okay, bring it.
So the first one is really stereotypical, and that is I have run a marathon before. The second one is that I once ate 30 marshmallow dream bars, like LCM bars, in a week. And the third one is one time when I was flying business class, I walked up to a man and told him his feet smelt and he had to put his shoes back on.
Oh my God. Okay. I just want the third one to be true. So I'm going to let that be true. And I want that story. Marathon. I don't know. You don't want to go to F45. Are you really going to do a marathon? I mean, LCM bars in a week. So what is that? 32. You're having four a day. Could you have 4 a day? I mean, you could. Okay, I'm going to say the marathon is a lie.
No, the marathon is true. I have run a marathon. I've actually run two.
What?
Yep, I used to be addicted to running. And yeah, I like putting that in there because everybody underestimates it. They're like, there's no way Victoria, of all people who hates like full-blown exercise, would do that.
Yeah.
I did eat 30 marshmallow dream bars while I was in the US recently because I was very pregnant. It's the only thing I wanted to eat and I was obsessed with them.
Because it's the texture as well.
Yeah, like it was the texture. It was like, you know, really bland in a way, but it was also really good anyway. So that was another one. And I did one time. I was on a flight. My team and I were all flying business and we were on group chat. And one of the team was sitting next to this guy who'd pulled off his really dank shoes. And she was like, I'm gagging. Like, this is so bad. I've put a mask on. I can't deal with it. And you could tell everybody around the plane was also the same. And I was just like, I can't deal with this. I felt bad because it was my team. And I just walked up to him like, hi. And at the point I think I was 23 weeks pregnant. And I went up to him like, hi, I'm so sorry. I'm 23 weeks pregnant and I can smell everything. Would it be okay if you put your shoes back on? And I then just like, I didn't even give him time to walk, like to respond. And I just walked back to my seat.
Oh my God.
And I sat there and I like, my whole body went red because I was so embarrassed. But he put his shoes back on. My team were very happy with me.
Oh, my God. Wait. So he was in first. Were you in first?
We were all in business. We were all in business and one of my team members was sitting beside him.
Oh, my God. Because I was like, were you also not in business? And then you went into the business.
No, we were already there. But can you imagine? I mean, that would be way better.
I can't believe that is wild. Wait. Are they all true?
No. Wait. Yes.
That's fine. I mean,
my baby brain like had written down a whole heap of things that were true that I could use, and I have a few that are fake, but it's below it on the list. I've just told you three truths. How bad is that?
We're going to call this segment Three Fun Facts. Welcome to our first episode of Three Fun Facts with Victoria Devine.
Victoria Devine has baby brain and decided to do whatever she wanted.
Whatever, just yellow. Oh my God, I love this. It's been such a pleasure. I'd love to hear your advice for your younger self.
I don't think I have any. And I say that because I think that I wouldn't want to change any of the mistakes I made because they've brought me here. And I think that a lot of the time we say we have these big regrets, but I think that those big regrets sometimes have led me to where I need to be. And if I could speak to my younger self, it would probably just be kinder. Like, be kinder to yourself. Like, you aren't silly. You aren't dumb. Like, you are much smarter than you give yourself credit for. And you are capable of doing things, because I feel like the one thing that I struggled with when I was younger is just that analysis paralysis of, do I do it? Don't I do it? No, people will think I'm really dumb. Like, even just starting She's on the Money took me a really long time because I was like, I'll start a Facebook group. But then what if no one comments? Like, what if no one, you know, wants to work with me? And so I think just be kind to yourself is what I would say, but I wouldn't give myself advice to change anything.
I love that. Preach. Amazing. Thank you so much.
And no, thank you for having me.
All the best with the bus.
It'll be fun. Oh, it'll be really fun.
Okay, that's it from me for now. Thanks for listening. And if you're loving the podcast, don't forget to leave us a review. And if you want more, join the conversation on the podcast Instagram at thelazyceo_podcast. Link to the show notes. Catch you next Tuesday.
Mom Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.